Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. On this podcast, we're going to finish up our interview with Dr. Wolf Eckhard-Lonig, an expert in plant breeding who's a former senior scientist at the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. We're going to pick up our conversation with Dr. Lonig, where he's talking about how Darwinian evolutionary biology held back acceptance of the laws of inheritance discovered by the famous monk Gregor Mendel. Now, Dr. Lonig, some authors have said that the monk's experiments are considered to be fictitious, but how does Mendel's description of superdominance in peas disprove this accusation? And can you also explain for us, in non-technical terms, what superdominance means?
To simplify, the term superdominance, also known as heterosis and overdominance, simply means, this is an example, that children surpass their parents in important characters, as for example, intelligence or height or other characters. Or take two pea plants displaying of a height of, say, 1 meter, and cross them and discovering that the descendants show a height of 2 meters and more, as I myself have found and worked upon, producing also twice the amount of seeds of the parents. Well, to come back to the question on the accusation against Mendel. So there is still another method to discredit Mendel after all. Several authors have maintained that the entire work of Mendel was simply fictitious, and none of the experiments he wrote about were ever made. Having worked on the genetics of the pea myself for 7 years, my PhD was on heterosis, or superdominance, as it's also called, in peasum. I have had no difficulties to accept Mendel's descriptions, which I have read and studied very carefully, several times. But I also discovered a very significant fact that has been generally overlooked in the discussion and in the accusation against Mendel, which I think proved the veracity of Mendel's work. An important proof of the authenticity and precision of Mendel's work is to be found in, among other things, the paragraph concerning the seventh of the character studied by Mendel. Mendel writes, "With regard to this last character, it must be stated that the longer of the two parental stems is usually exceeded by the hybrid. Thus, for instance, in repeated experiments, stems of 1 foot and 6 feet in length yielded, without exception, hybrids which varied in length between 6 feet and 7.5 feet. Thus, in this paragraph, Mendel clearly describes the trace of heterosis hybrid rigor over or superdominance, as the phenomenon was later named from 1914 onwards. Moreover, Mendel describes a second case of heterosis or superdominance when continuing as follows, quote, Mendel, "The hybrid seeds in the experiments with seed coats are often more spotted, and the spots sometimes coalesce into small bluish-violet patches. The spotting also frequently appears even when it is absent as a parental character. I would like to comment that without a theoretical basis and in the absence of any experiments, it is not, or it does not seem to be possible, to simply invent such specific but totally unexpected phenomena of science. Rather, one must stumble over such totally unaccustomed and unpredictable curiosities of nature to report them to an amazed audience. The two cases of overdominance or the heterosis superdominance, in my view, represent strong evidence that Mendel had really and exactly done what he described."
To what extent was the fight of the Darwinians against the discovery of the true laws of heredity successful in the first decades after 1900?
Well, a short answer to that question, by historian Zirkler reports, the controversy became so bitter that in 1903, the British periodical Nature, well, you know, our famous Nature, closed its columns to the Mendelians. The columns of Biometrica had already been closed to them. I call this the attempt to block or to shut off, obstruct an entire branch of true science. This shows the state of mind of the Darwinians of that time, sometimes even today on other topics.
Well, Dr. Lonig, I definitely agree with you that the Darwinians today use these kinds of tactics, but I had no idea that 100 years ago they were actually trying to shut out proponents of Mendel's ideas from the pages of journals like Nature. I mean, this is really quite disturbing that such a foundational part of biology was actually excluded from publication because of a Darwinian viewpoint. This sounds like very much like what we experience today. Why do you also speak of 72 years of the rejection of the laws by the Darwinians?
Because only with the start of the modern synthesis, the synthesis between selectionism and the two laws of heredity by Dobzhansky in 1937, Darwin's false ideas on heredity were largely abandoned. So until about 1937, the Darwinian schools of biology stuck to Lamarckian ideas of the inheritance of acquired characters in combination with Darwin's pangenesis theory. Even famous Ernst Mayr confessed that he had been a Lamarckian well into the 1930s. Quote, Mayr, "For a long time after 1900, it was widely believed that continuous variation obeyed entirely different laws of inheritance than those of Mendel. And this might add another reason for the neglect of Mendel's work. After all, gradual continuous variation was widely considered after 1859 as the only variation of interest to the evolutionists. And Mayr calls himself and the zoologist Wrench to be examples of neo-Lamarckism and of Darwinians who gave up their faith in so-called soft inheritance only very late in the 1930s.
So last question here. Is there still some skepticism and rejection of the correct laws of heredity in the present world of science?
In personal communications, I noted sometimes some skepticism concerning the Mendelian laws by a minority of biologists. And perhaps this is even more pronounced by some proponents of epigenetic inheritance systems. But as Stephen C. Mayr puts it in his book on Darwin's Laws, modern neo-Lamarckians fully apprise the reality of genetic inheritance, nevertheless think that the non-genetic sources of information and structure may play some role in the evolution of biological form. But the heavy accusations of dishonesty still around today against Mendel himself over decades now may show still some undercurrents against the true laws of heredity. However, new papers and investigations, as for example by Roman Bravo et al. In 2014, corroborate Mendel's experiments, and Klein und Klein in their book call Mendel one of the scientists, quote, that stick out far above even the Nobel Prize standard, to an end. And in several papers of 2014, Mendel is, of course, further called the founder of scientific genetics. Schwarzbach et al. In 2014 emphasize the conflict between Darwin's evolutionary idea and Mendel, who, quote, was more interested in proving that characters did not change over time and that the hereditary elements of a species remained constant. I may refer our listeners to my paper, which you can also find on the internet, about Johann Gregor Mendel, why his discoveries were ignored for 35 and in brackets 72 years.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lonig, for this helpful explanation, and it's very interesting to learn how the Darwinians actually opposed and rejected Mendel's laws of inheritance after they were rediscovered. That's certainly not the way that I think many of our listeners were taught biology. It's certainly not how I was taught biology. I was taught that evolutionary Darwinian biologists loved Mendel's laws and that they actually helped to confirm Darwin's theory. But it sounds like history tells a very different story.
Yes, but only after 1937, the so-called synthesis of the genetic laws and Darwinism.
Yes, and I think that part of the story is often not told. It's a part of the history that is taken out. So we appreciate you helping our listeners to understand the real history of Mendel's laws today.
Casey, thank you very much again for this interview. I hope it will also be interesting for you and the readers, because that aspect is, as you have just emphasized, generally forgotten and simply overlooked and deleted when the history of the Mendelian laws is given in textbooks.
So I guess the moral here is don't always think that you're being told the full story in the textbooks, especially when history, maybe we could say, is written by the victors, that being Darwinian evolution. They might leave out some portions of their history where they actually held back the progress of biology, which makes you wonder if maybe that's still going on today. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.